The portfolio doctors are Dan Osgood and Stephen Bick, who are investment advisor representatives of their respective registered investment advisor firms, ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC. The opinions expressed by the portfolio doctors and guests on this radio show are their own and do not reflect the opinions of this radio station. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only. Moreover, no listener should assume that any discussions or information presented serves as the recipient of or a substitute for personalized advice from ACAS LLC, Cottingham Management LLC, or from any other investment professional and is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management LLC are not law or accounting firms, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any listener. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation.
You're listening to The Portfolio Doctors on ESPN 1700. Your financial future depends on making sound investment decisions. Make sure you get accurate information and a weekly checkup from a source you can trust, Portfolio Doctors. Now, live in studio, here's Dan Osgood and Steve Bick, the Portfolio Doctors.
Happy Friday, everyone. Welcome getting back to some normal San Diego weather as opposed to last week where the sky was falling.
Absolutely.
And back to some sunshine. It's supposed to be really nice this weekend. This is the Portfolio Doctors. My name is Dan Osgood.
I'm Steve Bick.
And we are here to help, uneducate or relearn? Or what are we doing here?
Well, we're trying to educate people in a very difficult times. Well, although you would look at the stock market, it doesn't look very difficult. Just buy and hold.
That seems to be
today. S&P record high.
Once again, yeah, Dow's up 30, S&P up a point. NASDAQ was down a little bit, but overall the market has been pretty substantial.
And you got the VIX at 14. And for people that don't know what the VIX is, that's a study of volatility. And the lower the volatility or the longer the bull market runs, the lower the VIX goes. And a VIX of 14 means that the fear has left the building. We're expecting it to go higher from here. Everyone's complacent. When you see a massive down market like we had in 2000 and 2007, the VIX can get to 50 or 60.
Right, very quickly.
And yeah, and here we have it down at 14.
Yeah, the VIX is supposed to be a measure of volatility, yet it really only shows when there's fear and
Correct.
Markets are dropping. That's when it really, when you see it moving.
Yeah, and you can use it as a hedge to some degree, but it's really difficult because it's a forward-looking indicator. Mm-hmm. And I had a situation where I used it to try and protect myself, and I bought the wrong month, and it had factored in fear in that month. And so even though I hit it right, it still didn't move.
What's that saying? it's good to be right, but if you're right at the wrong time,
exactly,
it can not work out so well.
Yeah.
Coupons.com. Did you buy it today, Steve?
Oh, yeah. I'm up big, man.
There was an IPO today for a company that is losing a fortune, and it doubled. It was up 100% today. I think it came out somewhere in the $15 per share range, and last I saw it was around 30.
So it got a $2.4 billion valuation by losing, what do they lose, $200 million a year?
Net income, $11.25 million.
Loss.
Negative, yes.
Yep.
Operating cash flow of minus $14.16 million.
So there is really no multiple. A multiple is infinity on that.
Yes. But wait, you can divide by a negative.
Yeah, exactly right. But maybe my son can. He can do anything in maths. But it's just one of those really crazy situations, once again, showing, you know, how crazy the market is right now, where you can get a company that's suddenly worth $2.4 billion and it's lost money. I mean, that really makes my privately held e-commerce company worth about, based on that number, we must be worth at least $500 million.
Mm-hmm. Better get it to market quick.
Yeah.
And this coupons.com, this really it sounds and looks a lot like Groupon, where Groupon came out, ran like crazy, had value for a short period of time, then just slowly started bleeding. And I haven't looked at that in quite a while.
It's down big, but you're right. And what it really smacks of is back to like 2000, where it's people buy these now, just like they did in 2000, for the simple reason that the history over the last 12 months has been buy the hot issue, buy the IPO because it's going to jump 100% or at least 50 on day one. You can get in, you can dump it that same day, you can make some money and walk off. And it's got nothing to do with the long-term outlook on this company or the ability for them to drive revenues or create make cash flows or become profitable. It's got nothing. That's got nothing to do with this, because if it did, the company wouldn't be going public, because who would buy the stock?
Right.
No one.
Well, it's like we were having a conversation with a former securities attorney earlier today, and he was talking about things that he saw where whoever the investment banking firm, so the big broker-dealer typically that is involved to bringing this out to the market for the general public, they're playing games behind the scenes that no one knows has any control over. So that's what in many occasions runs these stocks up, and then they slowly unload them once they've gone up to these big levels. In the general public, they're buying because, wow, it's going up. And then as this big institution sells off, you're caught holding this stock at a high price, and it's maybe never, ever going to go back to that price.
Yeah, well, what those guys do and what they get away with is the rest of us would probably do prison time for. It's just crazy. I mean, and they can bury it, because if you just think of those big, large banks with hundreds of thousands of employees, and let's say they slip a million or two here and there, they just bury it.
Right.
It's impossible to find it. It's like you and me burying a one penny difference on our balance sheets. It's not hard to do. But, you know, good luck trying to bury $1,000 on our small amounts. And they just bury a few million here and there, no problem.
Multiple millions and no one knows.
It's just crazy. It's absolutely, anyway, don't get me wild up yet.
Well, you had a great blog today.
Oh, thank you.
Just touching, if anyone has not read it, you need to go. I believe we have that on Portfolio Doctors. That
yeah,
pops
I think
up
it
every
is
week.
Up there.
And it just kind of...
It was tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, tongue-in-cheek, poking fun at what goes on. And we've talked about this numerous times, just the nature of 24-hour-a-day news coverage of everything, especially relating to the markets, because there's markets trading overseas when we're not and vice versa. So there's always some form of news that they're trying to create, and... But many of your quotes were dead on, and we see them all the time, and they're just entirely out there to promote and create a reaction almost, like get someone to buy or sell something.
Well, one of the classic ones was just, you know, in the stock market, for example, today, what did the stock market do? I think it was basically flat pretty much. They will have someone on there that'll tell you why the stock market was only up 50 points or whatever it was. What does it say there? The Russell was down 1.22 points and the S&P was up one. So essentially that means the market did nothing today. But they'll tell you right now somewhere on TV or on the radio somewhere what the reason was for that move.
Right.
I mean, it's such a joke. They're wasting our time.
Didn't the market open up substantially first thing this morning?
No, a little bit up. Yeah, I was up like 80, 90 points. But, you know, it's like... You know, it's just
so then
crazy.
They had to explain the sell-off.
Yeah.
Because it opened up so high.
No, well, you could have one person explaining the sell-off, and then the very next analyst will be explaining why it was up for the day. Looking at the same numbers, doing two different – it's just – anyway, you've got to really take a lot of the stuff as with a pinch of salt and realize they're just trying to promote their radio show or their, you know, TV station rather than actually giving you decent advice.
Right. Yeah, it is just like we've talked about. If you get a copy of, say, Money Magazine at the beginning of the year, they always have their list of must-own funds.
Yep.
And I won't say guarantee, but with a very high degree of certainty, if you look at that list and you look through whatever the magazine is you're looking at, you're going to see a big ad from whoever's on that list.
No, exactly right. Well, you brought up something today. They're talking about funds, that ETF of ETFs.
Yeah, I just saw that. I got an email that talks about the ETF world, and there's a new product coming out that is out that's an ETF of ETFs.
So for people out there that don't know what the ETF is, we'll just remind you it's exchange-traded fund, and essentially it's just an index. So it's a number of companies that are thrown into this index, and then the index trades under an ETF symbol.
Symbol. Trades just like a stock.
And so what they've done is they've created an ETF of ETFs. In other words, you're basically buying everything. With one click of the mouse, you can buy everything.
I just on the surface, because I haven't looked into detail as to exactly what it is. I saw what the five components are.
Yep.
And it looks like it's an attempt at a broad, just one swipe of the brush and you've got access to everything. But it really seems like it's one of those target date type ideas that you see that you've seen in the mutual funds or an allocation type model fund where they're just a one-stop shop. Just put your money here and you're going to have this big balanced portfolio that should fit according
but
to
you
what
know
you
that,
want
yeah,
to do.
Yeah, you're right. And that's exactly what they're doing. But the problem is that it's turning the stock market into just put money in and walk away. Don't do any analysis. Mm-hmm. We'll just buy the index, walk off, and who really cares what happens after that? No one's holding these companies accountable, which is why you suddenly get these coupon people at $2.4 billion. It sort of smacks of a Roman orgy right before Rome went down. You know what I'm saying? It's really one of those things where they're trying to make it easier, but they're not really. They're not necessarily making it easy. They're just trying to create products that people will go, oh, here we are. It's a one-stop shop. I'll just dump my money in there and walk
right,
off.
Right, this is easy.
And it's not helping any of the investors out there create true wealth and to be able to hang on to their true wealth. What it does is it passes the buck onto someone else because what you've done is you've taken your money, you've put it in this ETF of ETFs. The stock market tanks. You go down with it. And you're able to go to your wife or your spouse or your friends or whoever it is and go, oh, well, you know, everyone else is in the same boat as me. Right. It's not taking any responsibility for what you do. It's like that ad we just saw on the TV about 10 minutes ago. That guy lost $500,000 gambling in the casino, suing the casinos because he can't believe they let him gamble drunk.
Right.
I mean, come on. They're giving you free drinks at the tables, for goodness sakes, to get you drunk so you gamble bigger. I mean, you know.
It's kind of part of the business model. And
yeah,
has
but
been
it,
since
it's take
it
responsibility for what you're doing because if you don't, then yes, go and dump your money in an ETF of ETFs and good luck.
Right.
Don't listen to our radio show because we're going to tell you that there's a lot better ways of making money than doing that and keeping it.
And we're not saying ETFs are a bad investment by any means. They are one of the best vehicles
you can
use.
But use your brain.
Right. There are ways to use them to where you're going to
absolutely
get the
well said.
Best bang for your buck.
Yeah. So. No, that's exactly right. I don't want to bang on them. You see, you wilded me up at the beginning.
Now, I know. You're pretty riled up today.
All steamed
wow.
up.
was it cocktail hour before you got here today?
No, unfortunately. Maybe that would have helped me. But no, it's seriously, I mean, you're right. Absolutely, I think ETFs have a place in a portfolio. Mm-hmm. But what steams me up is when you've got these ideas that investments can be a no-brainer type situation.
Right.
And
we're
I think
dummy
that's
it
really,
down.
To me, the part that's steaming me up. It's like, don't think about it. It's almost like just watch TV and let your brain get sucked out of your head. Don't, you know, please, Lord, don't help. Don't think about anything. Don't do an analysis of your expenditures and, you know, bury your head in the sand and you'll be fine.
Right.
That's the part that gets me. That's why we've got this radio show.
That's right. We're trying to help, trying to get you to think a little bit differently than what you're used to hearing and seeing on the TV, in the newspapers, in the magazines, and get away from the product-driven marketing that there is where they just want you to buy something because that's where these companies make a lot of money. So stick around. When we get back, we will dig deeper into stocks and not what they are, but how they work and what you can do with them to help plan for your future. Welcome back. You are listening to the Portfolio Doctors, ESPN 1700. And if you want to reach out to us, you can reach me, Dan, at theportfoliodoctors.com or Steve at theportfoliodoctors.com. Also, visit our website, theportfoliodoctors.com. And also, podcasts are up on iTunes now, so you can download our podcasts of any of our previous shows. If you're listening for the first time and you're liking what you're hearing, please go back, download some of them, and listen while you're commuting, exercising.
I guess Apple didn't listen to that show when we bashed on Apple stock. That's how we got onto iTunes, or how did we get on?
Yeah, it was a very difficult process, but somehow we were able to slide. Yeah,
there's some validity to us, finally. Someone's taken notice of us.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. So the stock market. According to an article I read in Yahoo Finance, since the Great Recession, which would have basically ended March 9th of 2009, I think is
the bottom.
That was the bottom.
Yeah.
The S&P 500 hit a low of 676 for that.
Yep.
Since then, it's up more than 170%.
Mm-hmm.
The Dow over that same time period is up 151%.
Yep.
And then the high flyer is the NASDAQ, is up 240%.
Yeah.
That doesn't tell the whole picture. The NASDAQ still has not reached its all-time highs back from 2000. It's still significant ways away.
I think it might make it based on the way we go. And you get some more coupons out there, and the next thing, there you go. You're back at it.
Come on, say it right. Coupons.com. Now, just anything .com, it's starting to look like.
I think anything cloud is basically the thing, the hot stuff. You know, I mean, I can't believe that Salesforce.com is still alive and well. They're losing money every year, but they keep going higher and higher and higher. I don't know. What are they? Like 50 times revenues at least. It's just crazy.
Yeah. It's interesting. And kind of the gist of this article, it's saying the market's up. We'll just pick the S&P 500 because it's kind of right in the middle, and that's the one most people relate to. It seems like easier. It's up 170% over the last 5 years. How is the general investor doing? In 401k plans, people have seen their balances growing in addition to just their normal contributions. So that's having a good positive impact because those people have stayed invested. But in a lot of the other self-directed investment accounts, people have been taking money out. And they did right around the time, of course, when the bottom is hitting. That's one of those anomalies that you see where money flows out right about the time where it should be flowing in.
Yep.
And that's not allowing these people to be participating in this giant.
Well, I mean, with the run-up in the markets and the housing run-up that we've had since the recovery or since the bottom, should I say, it's created the actual household wealth in America is higher than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's over $80 trillion now in household wealth. But the problem is that we've discussed this at length. There's a massive discrepancy between the people who have benefited from that increase in wealth because, you know, they've been beneficiaries of this because the wealthy own the stocks, own the houses, own everything that's gone up.
Right.
And so about 20 to 30% of the United States is benefiting from the stock market run. The other 70 to 80% is not.
And you can make the bigger argument that it's just the big corporations are benefiting the most.
Well, they're definitely benefiting because they're getting low interest rate loans and all the rest of it.
Right.
But no, for sure. I mean, there's definitely this dichotomy going out there, and that's the problem. That is a big problem because, you know, you've got so many people. And these guys who are making all this money, the wealthy, they tend not to give it back.
Right.
They get out of the market around about these types of times.
They're the ones getting out, right? When money finally starts flowing back in, that's when you see these people. It's kind of that IPO story where we're talking about the investment bankers playing the games, letting that stock run up, and then they start unloading their shares before the general public realizes what's going on.
Correct.
And then it's too late. And that's what happens with these big institutions. They're just cashing in their chips when everyone else is thinking, oh, it's a good time because the market's been up for 5 years in a row.
Well, I mean, I remember just, you know, The CEO, for example, of Salesforce.com, he's been selling stock into the market for years.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just taking money off the table and just keeps printing more shares. And, you know, he's going to be fine.
You're right.
You know, if that stock just gets pounded, he'll be absolutely fine.
Right. Well, Bill Gates has been doing that for years, too. But
yeah, all of them. You know, and I don't blame him. I would be doing the same thing if I were them. But I'm just saying that at some point, they've got so much money outside of the company, it really doesn't matter what happens to the company anymore.
Well, to go further on this article, it talked about some of the other impacts with not just the stock market, but expenses have increased in addition to the market increasing. Mm-hmm. And some of these things are not factored in, where they're saying, or inflation is basically non-existent. Here's some stats that maybe prove that different. The cost of fuel, a gallon of gas has gone from roughly $2.40 on average across the country in 2009 to $3.57
right.
in 2013, which they've been inching up higher lately, so it's probably even higher than that now. So you're looking at it at least a 50% increase over that period. So just annualize that out. That's 10% per year, but that doesn't get factored into inflation. So that's making the inflation
right.
numbers a lot less accurate.
Well, it sort of does, but it takes such a long time that you're right, pretty much doesn't.
And then here's a bigger one, which this goes to 2013 again, just because data is always backward looking.
Yeah, right.
The cost of annual premiums for healthcare, roughly $2,400 in 2003, is now roughly $4,600 in 2013, which I'm assuming it's even higher for 2014.
Right.
Just with all that's going on in the healthcare systems
right
now. And I mean, that, again, that's almost 100% increase.
So you're barely keeping up with it. The stock market's barely keeping up.
Right. Well, and the worst one is here. Pound of bacon. In just the past 2 years, it's increased by 21%. How can they do that to bacon?
Go long the hog, I guess.
Apparently. But the demand for hog is, or the demand for bacon is never going down.
I guess not. But, it just goes to show that if you don't, it's almost impossible to keep up with that type of inflation. I mean, it's way above the 2 or 1.5% that the Fed says that it's right. running at. And these are direct expenses, and it's sucking the money out of your average person's wallet. And they're not able to participate unless you've got discretionary money. Mm-hmm. You can't really participate in these types of rallies. That's not getting that's why the economy is still teetering on a weak economy, because the consumer is still hurting. Even though supposedly we've got more money than we've ever had before, 80 trillion instead of 70 trillion was the all-time high before. But all that 10 or 20 trillion's gone to just one small group of people.
Right.
And if you get an extra $10 trillion onto your other 70 trillion, it doesn't really matter. You've got everything. Mm-hmm. You don't need more.
And what we've talked about in the past, your personal inflation rate.
Correct.
Is much more important than just looking at these numbers. You can kind of figure that out yourself. I know of many, many people, I think they did some research that I read where the cost of gas will definitely impact people's
right.
ability to travel for vacations and do different things. And $4 seems to be that tipping point. And we're kind of right back
right
at that
back
number,
there, yeah,
at least
exactly.
here in Southern California.
Well, so, oil's over $100 a barrel.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. Because we're making more oil than just about we need, so there's less imports. We're not really pressing oil purchases. China's slowing down, and they were the major guys to take up most of the slack from the U.S. economy. And yet the oil price has gone, just keeps going higher.
You don't think there's any money being made with that, do you?
No, of course there is. But I mean, you know, the supply-demand right. equation I've been saying is skewed towards the supply side, which means the price should go down. And it hasn't. And I'm just still shocked with that.
I've not paid close attention to the price of oil over the years,
right.
but it seems like when I have, it doesn't seem like it follows a true supply demand.
No,
nearly Mm-mm. like many other products.
No, absolutely not. And you know, that's once again another issue, right? And so think about it, that 10 trillion we were talking about, from 70 trillion to 80 trillion now, that in net worth of the United States. Imagine instead of that $10 trillion going to, you know, the top 20% of the country, if it went, you spread it around amongst everyone.
To the other 80.
No, not that I want
to
be.
I'm
not, I never say I'm a socialist or whatever, but the point, I'm a capitalist through and through. But what that does is suddenly, what is the math on that? Does everyone get $100,000 or more? $300,000, I think, goes to every man, woman, and child. So you got a family of three, you've just got $1 million in your back pocket. Mm-hmm. What do you think that does to the spending equation? Holy smokes. You've got suddenly a consumer.
It goes up by a few trillion dollars.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Way more. Mm-hmm. Because now, I mean, the demand for goods and services and iPhones and every other thing under the sun, clothing. And
every house has a 60-inch flat screen on the wall.
I mean, you want to talk about wealth creation. Whew, and businesses doing well and a solid economic footing. That is just such a different equation to what we have right now.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why I'm still concerned about I just question this, that we've even had a recovery.
Well, on paper we have.
Exactly right.
On CNBC we have.
Right. But exactly. No, I just don't see it. And I don't see, I mean, you just see the numbers are just not there, and the consumer spending numbers aren't there, and the outlook from the consumer is just not there, because it hasn't reached the right people.
Right. And that's been the big flaw with all this bond buyback program. That money's just gone into the big institutions, the big banks, and they've just sat on it.
Well, they've taken massive bets, as we've discussed, behind the scenes.
Right.
And that's not helping us either.
That's free money to them, so they might as well. It's just like if you're playing craps or blackjack, or probably craps is the best one, in Vegas,
right,
and you throw a tip to the guy at the table, he immediately puts it on the highest odds, because that's just free money to him, so he might as well take a chance at the next roll. He's going to cash in 20 to 1 or whatever it is.
Yeah, I've still never worked that out, because why didn't they just pocket it? Then they'd make money. Whereas the other way,
they're going for the big hit.
Yeah, but then most of the time it doesn't happen.
Right. It just takes that once.
So you can be given something for nothing, but then you get rid of it right away. And that's the problem, because when people don't work for it oftentimes, they watch it just evaporate because they haven't had to work for it, and therefore it's not that valuable in terms of keeping.
Right. It doesn't have the same value.
But you've got to work as hard, and that's why we're here, because people have got to work their money as hard as they work to get it.
Absolutely. Well, when we come back, we will pick this up talking about stocks and then start talking a little more about innovation and different ways you can access the stock market. Welcome back. We have just seen the light. We've got CNBC on here in the studio, and we've talked briefly about some of the headlines that pop up periodically and making a little bit of fun out of them. And
the best one ever.
Yeah, just popped up. Move over bonds. Stocks become the new safety trade.
For sure. And, you know, their theory is because the U.S. stock market was pretty much the only international market that was up this week, everyone's so scared out there that they're all now buying U.S. stocks, which hence makes it a safety trade. And my word, how scary is this getting? I mean, because at some point, and you mentioned the black swan, and it always amuses me, the black swan, for people that don't know, it's a saying that was basically brought to the fore by Nassim Taleb, who's a crisis trader. And he says, you know, the black swan never existed until you find one. Then suddenly it's there, right? And so the theory of the black swan is when a crisis hits, no one ever knew it's there because it never was there before. And so when you suddenly find it, then everything breaks loose. And one of the things I said in my blog today, which is one of those other quotes, is that when people start talking about the next black swan event will be, it's such a ridiculous thing to say, because if you know what the next black swan is, then it's not the black swan, because if people know about it, then they're going to be ready. And this type of thing is that they said on the air right now of move over bonds, I mean, stocks are the new safety trade, is such a ridiculous thing to even, I mean, how can they get away with putting that on a national television show? But anyway.
It goes back to accountability.
Yeah, there's none.
There is none for these people, because it's just for almost entirely for entertainment purposes.
So, well, not only that, but they're also promoting the stock market, essentially. It's one massive advertisement for this stock exchange. So what they're saying is, just throw money, people, in the stock exchange because it's safe.
Right.
That's essentially what it's just said. And here's the stock market that runs so far. And what did you just say? The NASDAQ was up 240%
since 2009.
Yeah. And the volatility's down and fear's left the building. I mean, this is – and I'm not going to call a black swan, because I don't know what the black swan event will be. Right. But it just seemed to be setting up. Where the problem is that when you've got a market that's run so fast, and you've got people like these buffoons on TV saying that move over bonds, in other words, get out of the safe stuff, people, go into the risky part of the market, the stocks.
By the way,
we're at all-time highs, so everything's overextended by like crazy. If and when this black swan event hits, it's going to be serious.
Yeah.
That 80 trillion we just talked about, 40 of it's going to be gone.
You heard it
from me first.
That's right. I don't want to be around if that happens.
Well, I do.
Yeah.
Well, here's why. Because if you actually listen to what we're saying, the reason you want to be around when that happens is because if you actually do your homework and you position yourself correctly and you don't take that 50% hit in your entire portfolio and you've got cash that's floating around, you'll be able to buy stuff like Google and Apple for $25 a share.
Right. Things that are in a deep, deep sale.
Correct.
It'll be
at that point, yeah, it's now that's when you get in. You don't right. go, oh, it's safe now because everything's at all-time high.
Right. That's again, one of those anomalies where as the mom and pop, and that's what they call the group of just the general public overall, start investing, it's usually indicating the end of the big bull run.
Typically.
And then on the other side, when they're all selling out because they can't take it anymore, that's usually the bottom of the bear.
Yeah.
So, and that's exactly what
you're
talking about.
I don't want the market to implode. Really, I don't. It would make my life a whole heck of a lot easier if it just carried on forever.
Oh,
because
absolutely.
The wealth would eventually trickle down and people would start opening their wallets. And if this was normal, then we'd be good to go. And things like my business in Hawaii selling fudge is going to prosper because people are going to spend more money. They've got more discretionary money. So you got more traveling going on, more people going to Hawaii. They're looser with their money. It flows out of their pockets more. And businesses like that prosper.
Right.
Now, on the flip side, you have a market that just gets pounded. The global economy just gets pounded. You don't have tourists that go to Hawaii. So, you know, there's a problem.
Right.
I don't want this to by any means to just stop. But the worry for me is that it's getting to a point where it's been so badly manipulated and things are just going up just to go up because you got to get in. So get out of your safe trades and get into the risky stuff, and we're calling it safe now. That's just – it really sickens me.
That, again, goes back to one of Warren Buffett's comments that we kind of repeat over and over is be cautious when others are greedy and be greedy when others are cautious. And this is definitely looking like one of those times to use caution when you're – looking to do anything anymore. So with that, what are some of the things you can do that maybe take into account the possibilities of a black swan event or just different ways to invest that maybe aren't impacted as much by a black swan type event? We started touching on a few of these things last week with innovation being one of the things at the top of the list.
Innovation from businesses, yeah.
Right. A real innovative new product, something, of course, is going to be technologically driven nowadays, but something we brought up Elon Musk as being maybe the new Steve Jobs as far as being one of the biggest, brightest innovators out there. We're not saying go buy Tesla stock at $250 a share by any means.
He says don't buy it.
Right. We're just saying kind of pay attention to what he's doing because he's starting to put his fingers into a lot of different things, and it's really exciting to see some of the things he's working on.
No, it is. I mean, that's the one issue with that is, you know, with this market is it's already rewarded these innovators off the chart. Now, those guys and those companies will probably be fine in the long run, but I mean, it would be easy to see Tesla stock, which by the way, at the current value that Tesla stock is right now, it is bigger. Now, this is a car company that I don't know how many cars they sell a year.
30,000.
30,000 cars a year, okay. Well, it is bigger than Intel and Hewlett Packard. It's got a higher market cap than those two businesses combined. It's crazy.
Those two little companies, they don't really do anything.
So it's crazy. So, I mean, that's the type of thing where that's why you just don't buy that stock. But the company, I think, ultimately has got some good ideas. Mm-hmm. It's just overvalued, you know?
Right.
You can't do it. You can't.
So, and then.
But you can protect yourself.
Okay.
I mean, you can look at other ways to go. And we've spoken about, you know, the problem with protection is that there's a cost associated with it.
Right.
And the problem with the cost associated with protection is people aren't prepared to take it because they get things like the, we just saw that thing on CNBC about stocks are risky, safe. So pile in. And everyone else is piling in because they've all got their heads in the sand. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter because we'll all just go down together. And I guess Obama or someone will step in and save us like they always have, which right. no one ever has. But that's really what people are doing, right? They're relying on that. And so, but they don't want to take the cost of protection, which is, you know, safer investments like, you know, maybe a housing, you know, play. If you've got a first trust deed at, say, 50% loan to value, or, you know, short the stock market through one of those ETFs where it's going to lose money all the way as long as the thing's running. But you've got to constantly keep feeding that animal, the crocodile. Right. And it's cost you, you know, 5-10% every single year, which slow drags down your returns. But the day the black swan hits, you make a boatload and it saves you.
Right. And that emphasizes the magnitude of a loss.
Yep.
And how much more impactful that is to a portfolio, a strategy, whatever you want to call it. When you lose, that is extremely detrimental, much more so than if you miss out on a year where the market's up 30%. Yeah. Or 40%. You can afford to miss some of those.
As long as you don't get killed during the down market.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
It's much more impactful than participating in every up year. If you just lose in one of those big down years, you've wiped out many years worth of good, big, positive returns.
Well, that's what, and you know, it would be interesting. You could do a calculation, and you could do, and I haven't done it, so maybe we'll have this for next time. But, I mean, taking like a 18-20% return up, compounding it for, let's say, 3 or 4 years, which is what we've just done, 4 years, right? Mm-hmm. And then you add in a 35% down year, and then add in another 2 years of, say, up 15-20% versus just up 8-10% every single year.
Right.
And see who wins.
Yeah, you're guaranteed.
I don't know, man. It would be interesting to see.
That one down
35. That one down, yeah, I think would wipe you clean.
That's one of the best examples I've ever seen. Is one of my early managers in my career. He, part of his description when he would sit with a new client and go over what his role was he would talk about the magnitude of loss on their portfolio. And he would just write out, for round numbers, we'll just start with $100,000. And said, now mm-hmm. this year you lose 50%. On your investments because you come in and you tell me you want to be real risky, you want to grow this money as much as you can. So we lose 50%. And he would always pose the question to the client, how much do you now have to earn to get back to even? And more often than not, the people would say, oh, I just have to earn 50%.
No, yeah, exactly right.
And that's not true. That only gets you halfway back.
Right.
And so you have to earn 100% to get back if you lose 50%. And most people don't quite connect the dots on that. And the reality is, in most normal market cycles, in order to earn 100%, if you're averaging 7% a year, you're taking a fair amount of risk.
Right.
That's 10 years just to get back to where you were so you can start trying to grow your money again.
Right.
And just take 10 years out of your life and fast forward with no money and then start the process over again, that's really, really detrimental to the long-term
portfolio. Exactly right. Exactly right.
And that's what we're really trying to emphasize. Again, I hate to keep harping on Warren Buffett, but the best way to make a lot of money is to not lose money.
Correct.
That's one of his main philosophies.
And have cash when the market gets pounded. Right. I mean, and that's hard to do because you have to have sold near the top to be able to have the cash when it gets near the bottom.
Right. So outside of innovation, we only talked about Elon Musk, but just
right.
look at the different products out there. Biotech, it seems right. like there's huge strides being made in the healthcare
world.
The problem
I've always had with biotech is I just don't understand it.
Yeah, I agree. And that, again, we'll go back to Warren Buffett. He doesn't
right.
invest in anything he doesn't understand.
Well, that's why I never touch biotech.
But it is an area where it seems like there are
oh,
extremely
yep.
fast advances taking place, where there is huge growth potential.
No, you hit the right company that gets the right drug. I mean, you think about Lipitor and, you know, all these other blockbuster Celebrex or whatever they are, and these blockbuster drugs, and you've got it all locked up under patents and that. I mean, what does Lipitor do? It's like $5 billion a year or more, I mean, in sales. And all that money goes to one company, and I'll tell you, the margins, once they get that thing out there, is about 90%.
Right. It's something like after the first year, maybe not even that long, once it's in the market, it's just printing
money. That's why they play that game. But to be able to pick that winner, you better have a lot of horses in that race.
Right. Yeah, because it does only take the one for it to work out really well.
Yeah.
And that's not even counting other things like stem cell research and plenty of other things going on in that arena.
It's hard enough just to keep up with technology, let alone trying to work out what's going on in the biotech world.
stick around. We'll be right back, and we'll discuss a couple other ways you can invest and potentially be a little safer. Back, coming into the home stretch. Thank you for listening. It is Dan Osgood and Steve Bick. We are the Portfolio Doctors, and we are wrapping up a wonderful Friday. If you do want to reach out and chat with us, you can email me, Dan@theportfoliodoctors, or Steve@theportfoliodoctors. Once again, our podcasts, they're all saved. We're up on iTunes. Just do a search for the Portfolio Doctors. You'll see the whole listing of past shows, and you can download them and listen at your leisure.
I want to just go back to that Tesla stock again just to show sort of how ridiculous it is. So it's worth $30 billion, right? It's trading at 12 times sales.
Okay,
so sales for the year they're expecting to be $2.5 billion. So there's 12 times sales. GM and Ford sell at 0.4 times sales.
They're not as innovative.
No, understood. But they're profitable, and Tesla's yet to make a dollar. So, and that's a very good point you bring up. What people are paying for innovation right now is just too much of a premium.
Right.
I'm prepared to pay for innovation, but that's just craziness.
Well, and I think it's because they are putting their fingers into so many other parts.
I understand.
That the battery technology looks like it has so many uses, and I know that that's part of the factored in price.
Well, they don't call it a battery factory, chap. You can't call it a battery factory. You got to make it a good name if you're going to be worth 20 times or 12 times revenues.
Okay.
The Gigafactory.
Gigafactory.
Yeah.
So they're producing gigas.
Exactly.
Okay.
Put a giga in your car and hit go.
Yeah. And go fast.
I guess.
Everyone I've talked to that has tested it's a phenomenal car.
Well, think of a golf cart. It got so much torque.
Yeah.
You know, but admittedly, a golf cart, you max out quite quickly. But I mean,
the golf cart doesn't get to 60 quite as quickly.
No, but it gets from zero to whatever it can go really quick.
Immediately.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've touched on different types of alternative investments. There are a couple things that are becoming more and more in the forefront, I guess, like socially responsible investing.
Right.
There are actually funds out there that only look at companies that do things in a socially responsible manner and don't produce products that are potentially cancer causing and things like that, or very green oriented solar type companies. And those are definitely things with huge growth potential to them.
They are, you know, because there's a lot of movement towards this whole, you know, responsible investing type things. And it's not only just necessarily green. It's also just how they handle problems, you know, in terms of cleaning up their mess or being upfront with investors and things like that, and being, you know, forthright and taking responsibility. So a lot of it's also that. But because if you think, just take your example of solar, it's supposedly green in the fact that there's no emissions, but what happens behind the scenes in terms of making that solar panel?
Right.
You know, how green is that?
And what about disposal of the panel
of
after?
Of course, which, you know, you think of Tesla, yay, we've got no emissions, but what are you going to do with all these batteries?
Right.
How are you going to get rid of that? So, I mean, you know, you've really got to keep your wits about you in this. You know, and there is a movement towards that. But interestingly, most of these socially conscious businesses have had a real tough time trying to work that into profitability.
Right.
I mean, because if you're adding all these added layerings of, let's say you've got, what you're going to do with your smokestack and how you're going to get rid of that. And you now got the cost of putting in something that captures all that smoke and does something with it. That's suddenly a cost to doing business, where the guy that's just letting it billow into the ozone layer, he doesn't really care and his profits are looking good.
Right.
So it's a real difficult concept to get your arms around. And then, of course, you've got the complete
Right. That's what I was just going to say. And on the flip side, you have socially irresponsible investing, which there is a fund out there called the Vice Fund.
Yes.
The symbol V-I-C-E-X. And it literally invests in all the personal vices. It's got tobacco, alcohol, I think pornography.
And it's probably got pot now with all of those pot stocks that are coming, but they're
I'm not sure any of them are
small.
Yeah, I don't know that any of them are high enough price to qualify for any mutual fund investments. But
the problem is, the one thing about those stocks is they always make money.
Right.
Those companies are just spewing off cash flow.
Well, that's why you look at the companies like the junk food, the Coca-Colas, although Hostess went out of business, those types of companies.
How did they do that? I don't know.
In difficult times, people still spend money on those things because it's kind of that little
safe.
The safety. Oh, I feel I'm down in the dump, so I'm just going to go eat myself into oblivion or whatever the thinking is. But those companies, it is proven that they continue to make money in good times and in bad.
No, well, exactly. I mean, and also it's sort of a pick-me-up. You know, they actually discovered that there's more alcohol sold during down years than when there's a good year. Because people don't apparently need the support of alcohol when everything's going great. It's when, you know, you've got to try and explain to your wife that you've just lost the house, right, that you might need a few beers on the way home, you know. So
liquid courage.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, and we're not saying pile into vice stocks either. We're not saying pile into any other stuff. In all honesty, what we're just showing you is just alternatives. And you know, not only that, you also get stocks that are cyclical type stocks. Mm-hmm. So you get the defensive stocks, right? Those are the utilities and things like that, which are constantly going to produce a good dividend. They're constantly going to. People need to keep the lights on.
Right.
And although they're regulated, you're still okay because you're going to be able to make money regardless, right?
Right. Absolutely. There's endless numbers of stocks, different companies that you can invest in that basically follow any lifestyle choice that you have. And those are options that you should look at.
Right.
It goes along with, again, another Warren Buffett philosophy that buy things you understand. And if
that's
something you're
right.
passionate about, you can feel good about what you're investing in. And that it makes sense.
Well, yeah, but it's a defensive trade. So you're able to actually get into something that should do okay during a down market. It's not necessarily something that you're going to have to get pounded with. You know, you can get in these. They're not going to perform like the Nasdaq's done. Because there are defensive positions.
Right.
But when the market falls to pieces, these are the stocks that the seasoned professionals are going to pile into and drive those prices higher.
Right. And one of the cyclical things is like natural gas.
You Correct.
Can, almost every year, winter months.
Although nat gas got so badly beaten up because of that fracking.
Right. Although it's been doing more like normal. Well, that about wraps it up for today. Thank you very much for listening. This was The Portfolio Doctors. And have a great weekend. Enjoy the sunny weather, and we will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to The Portfolio Doctors on ESPN 1700. To schedule a financial health check, go to theportfoliodoctors.com. Or to speak with Dan Osgood, Steve Bick, or any guests on this program, call 858-764-7250. That's 858-764-7250, or go online at theportfoliodoctors.com. That's theportfoliodoctors.com.
The portfolio doctors are Dan Osgood and Stephen Bick, who are investment advisor representatives of their respective registered investment advisor firms, ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC. The opinions expressed by the portfolio doctors and guests on this radio show are their own and do not reflect the opinions of this radio station. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only. Moreover, no listener should assume that any discussions or information presented serves as the recipient of or a substitute for personalized advice from ACAS LLC, Cottingham Management LLC, or from any other investment professional and is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management LLC are not law or accounting firms, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any listener. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation.